You might know Stuart Copeland best from his work with the English rock band The Police, with whom he and his fellow bandmates Sting and Andy Summers compiled an impressive 6 Grammy Awards, an MTV Music Award, and they sold 75 million albums. In 2003, he and The Police were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and in 2016, Rolling Stone magazine ranked him as the 10th best drummer of all time. But those are just a few statistics from his life as a rock and roll drummer. His musical life outside of The Police shines just as bright. He now composes for film and television, including penning scores for the films Wall Street, Talk Radio, Highlander 2, She's All That, Sunset Strip, and more. And TV shows like The Equalizer, Babylon 5, Dead Like Me, and Desperate Housewives. He also creates music used in video games. But this October 21st and 22nd, Stuart Copeland will showcase his orchestral prowess when he joins the Erie Philharmonic and Daniel Meyer for a program he calls The Police Deranged. Hello, everybody. I'm Brian Hanna. Welcome to Better Than Monkeys here on WQLN NPR. Well, The Police Deranged for orchestra is bursting with The Police's biggest hits, including Roxanne, Don't Stand So Close to Me, and Message in a Bottle. With Copeland on drums, 3 singers, guitarist, and the full symphony orchestra, these unique compositions, also arranged or deranged by Copeland, give new life to classic songs and select hits from the career of one of the generation's greatest and most influential artists. Thanks to Steve Weiser and our friends at the Erie Philharmonic, I'm pleased to welcome the legendary Stuart Copeland to the WQLN airwaves and this episode of Better Than Monkeys. How does a boy from Virginia end up playing drums for rock and roll bands in England?
Well, I didn't stay in Virginia long. I left when I was 2 months old after getting hatched in Alexandria, Virginia. Went over to Cairo, Egypt, where my daddy was busy installing a dictator. And then when he finished doing that, we moved to Lebanon, Beirut, Lebanon, which is where I did most of my growing up before I was packed off to boarding school in darkest Somerset, England.
Well, when you say installing a dictator, your dad worked for the CIA at the time, correct?
That's right. And the dictator actually was Gamal Abdel Nasser, who was actually a very benign dictator and did great work for Egypt. He was a member of the Non-Aligned Movement, which is in those days, it was during the Cold War, and it was called the Third World, the Non-Aligned Nations, who were neither for the West nor for the Russians, for the Soviet Union. But little did the other non-aligned nations, Tito, Yugoslavia, and all these others supposedly non-aligned. Our guy was installed by the CIA, and we had our own player right there in the middle of a lot of them. But he wasn't totally in the control of the Americans. I mean, he was his own guy. He just happened to be a really good guy and did very well for his nation, and gave us an inside scoop on the non-aligned movement. This is all Cold War stuff. And since there are no memorial cemeteries to all the American patriots who died defending their country in the Cold War, it's largely forgotten now that at that time, the Soviet Union and the United States and China was kind of a part player. It had not yet risen. It was a battle of ideas. And our side pretty conclusively won, although we've been losing it ever since.
Well, you know, you always hope that you live in interesting times, and you have. So how do you get
interesting
from being
places too?
In interesting places. So how do you go from Virginia to being a government brat to
all that,
playing
all
in
that,
a rock
that,
band?
The banging on drums. That's where you're going. I know it.
That's kind of where I'm going.
That's a completely reasonable question. Well, I started banging stuff in Beirut, Lebanon at the American Embassy Beach Club, where we played Kinks, James Brown, Rolling Stones, early stuff, this is late 60s. And that's where the music began, right? You know, I could have grown up anywhere in Bora Bora, and I would have ended up banging stuff one way or another.
So who was your first big influence?
I'd say Jimi Hendrix. Well, my daddy raised me to be a jazz musician, so I was influenced by wrong jazz. That's to say white big band jazz. Louis Belson and Stan Kenton. But Buddy Rich did stick. And Buddy Rich still, to me, is, you know, never got any better than that. But that style of music is not, I can't, you know, that was what I was raised to be, therefore that which I am not. Then when Jimi Hendrix happened, that was it for trumpets.
I feel the pain because I'm a trumpet player. So
oh,
I'm
really?
Still struggling today.
Oh, so, you better keep it up, man, because my daddy was a trumpet player. And when he lost his lip, he would not go anywhere near the instrument because it hurt him to not be what he knew that the instrument was capable of. And that's just all for trumpet player. It's just that one tiny little muscle, then one part of your upper lip there. And never mind your fingers, never mind your toes, never mind your biceps, never mind any other part of your anatomy. It's just that one muscle.
Well, I haven't looked at it like that, but I'm slightly terrified now. So thanks for that. No, it's a wonderful thing to be a musician. And, you know, you've shared the stage with some great musicians. And of course, I was reading that early on when you first became the Police, that a lot of the song credits were going to you.
There was no credit. I wrote them. The credit, that's taking a little far.
Right.
I blame would be a better word.
As time went on, Sting wrote more and more, and you started more and more co-producing this stuff. So did you teach Sting to write?
Yes, of course I did. He owes everything to me, my careful ministrations, the studious education that I gave him in music. I taught him to play bass. I gave him that voice. He owes it all to me. His castle in Italy, his ducal palace. Is my ducal palace, but I let him live in it because he's
That's
cool.
That's very kind of you.
Actually, no, he did learn because of the world that I dragged him into, which is the world of punk. And that's the reason that we started out with my songs, which were hardly could be called songs. They were basically bass lines with yelling to fit in. They were songs of convenience, as our image was an image of convenience that we were a punk band because that was the only scene happening. That's the only clubs that was there where life was, where all the energy was in that scene. So we had to play songs of that ilk, which I came up with in about 20 minutes. And so in that constrained world with very strict rules, not many people get this, but the punk rules were very strict. Thou shalt not have long hair, of course. I mean, it was all about the hairdo. Thou shalt have tight pants. But then again, prog rock had tight pants too. This punk was blacker and tighter. And thou shalt not do love songs, thou shalt not have guitar solos, thou shalt not play songs longer than 2.5 minutes, yada yada yada. Anyhow, that discipline which Sting took on and applied to his deeper musicality, which in the beginning could not reach fruition because our first guitarist couldn't play any of that fancy stuff that was in Sting's mind. When Andy Summers joined, he could play that stuff. And suddenly Sting now had a sounding board. I mean, we came up with great grooves and great riffs and great rhythms and great energy. And he had all kinds of charisma on stage. But the songs didn't start happening until about a year and a half to 2 years into the Police's life. That's when he came up with Roxanne, Can't Stand Losing You. And so I'm largely because Andy joined and could play them.
You're listening to Better Than Monkeys from WQLN NPR. I'm Brian Hanna, and you are listening to an interview featuring the legendary percussionist and drummer, Stuart Copeland, the guest soloist with Your Erie Philharmonic, October 21st and 22nd at the Warner Theater. More information is at eriephil.org. As a collaborative band, everybody could write songs, everybody could contribute, and you would just build these things. Did you build them in the studio as you were supposed to record them, or did you just add things to your set list?
The first album was recorded after we had played the songs all over the place. And yes, I never thought, and I don't think any of the three of us thought, whose song is this? Whoever's got a song, oh, that's good, let's play that. And I never even noticed that, you know, Sting would bring a song in and say, yeah, let's play that. Cool. And we would drop a song of whatever origin. They were all my songs. It'd be one of my songs get thrown overboard. But I always saw it as an upgrade. We all did. I mean, Sting would pull out a song and it's obvious, no brainer. Let's work on that. But always, we always got our toe in. We always, had to put on the tree. which we did all the way, and that became more and more difficult. That's where the friction came later, is because as Sting was more and more validated as a songwriter, and knowledgeable as an arranger, he was less and it was more and more difficult for him to compromise. When he had a clear idea of a perfectly good song with an absolutely perfect arrangement in his head already, he had to run it past those two other who would rip it up and put their own stank on it. And that got harder and harder for him. But we held on to him for 5 albums, for which I'm very grateful.
And a lot of Grammys. Over the course of your whole career, you've amassed an impressive 7 Grammys at this point, correct?
Yeah.
Give or take?
Yeah, so, give or take. 2 of them beyond the Police. And right. 2 of them in the last couple of years. I'm very proud of that. Actually, wait. Those Grammys were for the New Age album last year and the year before. The album that I have out now is not New Age at all.
Right.
It's Ram Slam Blamma. It's the Police songs with orchestra, which is what I'm going to be doing in Erie. But the new version of the album is that the same orchestral backing tracks, only with the lyrics in Hindu, Chinese, Zulu. Every breath you take in Zulu is something else. It's really beautiful. It is absolutely spine tingling to hear American music, American Black. I mean, the Police is fundamentally, our music derives from Black culture. And for that music to arrive back in Africa and to hear these singers in Africa who have heard some Aretha Franklin, to hear that African interpretation of what we no longer call African-American music, it's Black. That gets my spine tingling. I mean, it's an amazing thing. It's where our music came from.
Right.
The backbeat is a Black, derives from Black culture. Even right. Country and Western bands are playing Black culture.
So where did that come from for a British band?
From Chuck Berry, Little Richard, and the rest. And you know, Mick and McCartney will be the first people to tell you that's where they got their stuff. They even played the actual songs of Chuck Berry and Little Richard.
The Police always had kind of an orchestral vibe too, especially in the later
years. Well,
that's
Andy. That's Andy Summers. Mm-hmm. You know, most guitarists can buy an amplifier that goes up to 11. Andy's fingers go up to 12. I'm sure he's got 12 of them. I'm going to count them next time I see him.
What can we look for when we hear The Police deranged on the Warner Theater stage?
Well, the songs you kind of know, although I have played Hide the Hit in a few instances. I have messed with them. But the favorite, you know, your favorite parts you get. And you got me banging stuff. But the songs are sung. I mean, how am I going to replace Sting? Some guy? Are you kidding? That poor bastard. So the Three Soul Sisters was kind of an intellectual brainwave. Oh, that would be clever. And then I did that, and I put it on the page, and I orchestrated it and arranged their parts. And then I heard them. Oh, my God. I am suddenly become a fan of the Supremes, the Ronettes, the Chiffons, all these girl groups, and also the male groups, too, you know, the Four Tops and such. And it's sort of like the Police sung by the Supremes, which is really cool, by the way. It just so happens. It just so happens. And for Andy, yeah, the only way to replace Andy is with a gigantic symphony orchestra. Like I said, 12 fingers. You need a lot of men and women to do that. And so the orchestra has an even wider vocabulary than Andy Summers. They can surge high, they can dig deep, they can rage, they can whimper, they can softly seduce. The orchestra just has this huge vocabulary of cool shit they can do. And when you give them the right songs, and not just good songs, which, you know, the songs that Sting wrote undoubtedly are good songs, but more important than that, they are known. They're part of people's lives. You've been playing it on your radio station for 40 years. People, even if they're not Police fans, have grown up, have loved, have lived with these songs. So they have an emotional impact. You throw in a big bad orchestra, these 3 incredible women, me banging, it's a heck of a show.
So Steve Weiser's here with us, the executive director of the Erie Phil. And I'll tell you what, speaking of whimpering, he's been whimpering since I brought him on this Zoom call because he is so excited to talk to you.
Oh, cool. I can't wait to meet his band.
His band is okay. They're doing all right.
By the way, those orcs are cousin musicians. And rocksters are intimidated by orcs, and orcs are intimidated by rocksters, because, you know, the rocksters look at the orchestra players and say, my God, they can read. Oh my gosh, that must be some hidden, you know, some cabal, some hidden, you know, only revealed to the few, you know. And the orchestra players look at the rocksters who can improvise. Oh my God, they compose on the spot. How do they do that? And so they're kind of intimidated by each other. But I've been working with orcs for 40, God knows how many years. I mean, 20 years before The Mast as a film composer, is where I learned what orchestra can do, and how to communicate with the orchestra, which is by putting it on the page, and how to put it on the page in such a way that they will read it and deliver it has taken me decades, and I'm still working on it. I'm still studying my Debussy, my Ravel, my Stravinsky, and always learning, you know, how does he get that schwang right there? Okay, well, for one thing, he's got two harps. you know, and I can see, you know, and this is what Uncle Igor did too. I mean, he also looked at the scores of his predecessors, and because you don't get to just listen to U2's album to figure out how they did it. You don't get to experiment on the podium. So you have to study what went before on the page, which is what I've spent decades doing.
Well, you know, Steve's a percussionist himself.
Of course.
Yeah, he's okay.
All the people who run stuff in the orchestra world turn out to be percussionists. And that's true in rock and roll too. I mean, you don't send the singer to get paid from the club owner. You send the drummer with his knuckles dragging.
So Steve, how did you find Stuart to bring him in to play with the Philharmonic?
So we have been looking to do a fun show like this for a while, and I'm all over Facebook, so we're just studying and seeing what comes out. So we're obviously aware. I'm just an overt nerd about finding a way to get new things to bring to the theater, to bring new people in. So it's why we do the film concerts. It's why we do Harry Potter, Star Wars. It's why we want to make something that, as an experience, you can come to this Warner Theater that's a 1930s movie palace, but we've put this state-of-the-art performing arts center on the back of it. But then get to see one of the living legends on an instrument play songs that everybody knows. Why would you not want to do that? So the second I saw that this was a traveling show and I saw the clips from San Diego, it was a very easy decision to go to our music director and be like, okay, well, this is an easy choice. This we have to do.
Well, I'm sure glad you made that choice, because I love playing this show. And the San Diego one that you saw was the first one. The San Diego Symphony graciously gave me a few extra days to work out the kinks in the chart. Cool. And really hone it down. So by the time we get to Erie, those charts are solid.
That's awesome.
I think you're on the third iteration, the third version of them.
I'm Brian Hanna, and you are listening to an interview featuring the legendary percussionist and drummer, Stuart Copeland, the guest soloist with your Erie Philharmonic, October 21st and 22nd at the Warner Theater. More information is at eriephil.org. You have a new recording, a recently released second album, Police Beyond Borders. Go ahead and give us a little real in-depth on this.
The prelude is Police Deranged for Orchestra, the album of the show that I will be playing in Erie. The same album with these songs in all kinds of different languages is just a step beyond sanity. And it's really different and strange and beautiful. I sent Tea in the Sahara in Chinese to Stingo, just so that I could imagine him going cross-eyed, just to ruin his day. And he actually sent a really nice note back. I couldn't believe it. I'm gonna have to f- even more now. But you know, the Police Deranged, if Sakamoto hadn't died, we would have had a number one classical album. And my heart is full of sorrow for this loss to the music world, which cost me that number one slot. But we were number two in the classical crossover chart and Billboard. But even in the straight, regular old Sunday go to meeting classical chart, we got to number three in that chart too, which I'm very, 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 very proud of.
As you should be. It's really a beautiful opportunity to hear some great music in ways you've never heard it before. Where can they find that if our listeners wanted to get it?
Oh, Spotify, everywhere? I guess. I mean, I'm sure there's a record store, so I should be plugging a record. But
there's still record stores? There are.
Yeah, you go to Spotify in here, and I don't get paid. I think you get a dollar for every million listeners or everything. But that's not why I do it these days. I'm retired. I make music for music's sake, art for art's sake. You know, money for God's sake is not my thing anymore. And so go ahead and listen to it on Spotify.
I think people should also check out your website. There's some great clips on your website, including Satan's Fall. Lovely. That's a wonderful piece. And that's with the Mendelssohn Choir in Pittsburgh. So some neighbors just to the south of us.
That's right.
Really wonderful.
Well, they have a great choir. And also I played with, they commissioned a piece, the Pittsburgh Symphony commissioned a concerto for Stu Daddy and Orchestra, which is another show that I've been doing. I love Pittsburgh. But Satan's Fall is about the problem of Satan. What's up with Satan? How can the creator of all the universe have an adversary? How did he get to be that way? And John Milton,
Paradise Lost.
Wrote Paradise Lost about that subject. And within the enormous volume of Paradise Lost, the gazillion words of blank verse, I found a story within a story, which is what's up with Satan. And that's what Satan's Fall is.
It's brilliant. And if you think Stuart Copeland's only a rock and roller, you're wrong. Dead to Me, one of my favorite shows. You got some soundtrack on that. Wall Street, Good Burger, the list goes on and on and on. Erie is really privileged to have you come in and share your talents with us. And this is going to be October 21st and 22nd, 8 p.m. on the 21st, 3 p.m. on Sunday at the Warner Theater. Steve Weiser, how do people get tickets?
So website, eriefill.org, phone number 814-455-1375. Check out our Facebook page. We have daily things going on. We have a really cool video that Stuart sent along that we're using to promo the show. Lots of great things. We'll be sharing some of the clips coming out leading up to the concert. And we're more than 50% sold out already. So please don't wait to get the tickets for this. It's going to be a hot ticket. We anticipate to sell out. So we're looking for about 4,500 people over the span of 2 days to see this thing.
It's going to be a fun show. I love it. It burns down the house every night.
It's going to be so exciting. So thank you for sharing some of your time with us here today on Classics. And Steve, I hope you get your Synchronicity album signed.
I've ruined more than one drum student's lesson trying to make him learn the beginning of Murder by Numbers. It's like, all right, good luck counting this. I love it.
Well, come see the show. We do that song.
I'll be there. Don't worry.
October 21st and 22nd. It's Stuart Copeland and the Police Deranged with your Erie Philharmonic. It's going to be an exciting night. Thank you, Stuart, for taking time out of your busy schedule to hang out with us a little.
Well, thank you. Thanks for listening.
Better Than Monkeys is a production of WQLN NPR.